Welcome to Mormons on Mushrooms. In this podcast, we discuss alternative methods for healing from trauma and seeking a fulfilling life. We often discuss triggering topics. We ask that you make your personal mental health a priority. In addition, the opinions offered by our guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the hosts of this podcast. If you'd like to support the program, please visit www.patreon.com/Mormons on Mushrooms. Thank you for listening and enjoy.
There she is.
Hey, there she is.
I literally have a terrible excuse. I was like, you know how this is like so good actually, because it goes with the topic that we were going to talk about. But I was like, my first instinct was to rack my brain and be like, come up with a reason why you're late. And then I was like, the truth is that I took too long of a shower. And that's
that's all right. Your excuse is better than I was like cutting it close. I got on right at 7. Because I was taking a shit and I was panic. I was like, oh man, I got to get out of here soon. So
I don't know. I mean, like taking a really good shit is probably, that's on par. Like as far as like pleasure levels and just like self-care, everyone has to poop.
Everyone poops. Is Doug's face frozen right there in that position?
It was frozen.
Am I back now?
It was a good everyone poops face though, Doug. Just so you know, it was a good.
It looked like you were taking a really good poop.
My screen didn't freeze. I just was actually cracking off a little fart there, and I just wanted to give you guys. Anyway, that's the topic we're going to talk about tonight, huh? Poop. Everybody poops.
I don't know. I feel like I've talked about poop a lot with clients, to be honest.
Oh, really? That's something that's coming up a lot?
You know what? It's coming out a lot. That's coming for sure. No, I mean, because not to get like too nitty gritty, but I mean, I would say at some point I end up talking to clients about their physical, like, you know, symptoms of what's going on. And at some point we talk about their digestion/bowel movements because it's so significant. Like our body's ability to digest food, digest what's coming in, and is so significant. And then, so like often people who struggle with stress or worry a lot or are having a hard time like taking things in have acid reflux a lot. Mm-hmm. And then if they are constipated frequently, it often correlates with either like an inability to face or let go of the past, or kind of like a holding on to things, holding things in. And then with diarrhea, it's usually connected to like anxiety. And a lot of times, because like your colon is really expressive, it's like, am I holding on to things? Do I feel like dried out, or do I feel like I can't keep anything in? And nothing is safe. And so it's like diarrhea. So it's like an overactive bowel. So I bet you didn't think we were going to talk about poop.
No, but you know what? It's making a lot of sense to me in my life with like, I'd get both. I've had a lot of bowel troubles in my life. Yeah. But not really in the last couple of years.
That makes sense.
I shit very well right now.
Yeah. I'm really happy about it. If we're getting super honest, I was like super constipated my whole life, like very, very bad. And it was very miserable. And then it turned out that I had like a lifetime of repressed trauma, that the moment that I acknowledged it, I'm just a happy pooper now.
I gotta get on the level that you two are on, because I still, like, I don't know. This, I'll tell you, the last couple of weeks has been good for me, because I've just been kind of like at the mercy of, you know, roadside, like rest stops and gas stations and stuff like that, which normally I would avoid like the plague, because, you know, God knows how many butts have been on those seats and what they've been doing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's kind of unlocked some new mysteries for me. But I need to get on the level that you two are on, where it's just happy campers when it comes to the old shitter.
I mean, Doug, we can talk about your bowels right now, like free session. I also have a lot of clients who, like, because I had so many problems and I had parasites too. So like, And so it's like, if there was something that could be wrong with my insides, it was wrong. And so I have helped people with all sorts of things.
You guys, can I talk about my parasite story for a minute? Because it comes with a lot of shame. So when I was a teenager, my bum would itch like a motherfucker. And sometimes I would like fill in there, and then there would be these white little worms there. But I was too ashamed to tell anyone about it.
Oh my God.
I didn't know why it was there, not. So I just lived with that for several years. And it would flare up sometimes. It wasn't constant, but sometimes they would flare up, sometimes they wouldn't. And then when I went to Brazil on my mission, I took parasite medicine
and
wiped that right out. But like, that's all I needed. All I needed is to go to the doctor. But I felt so much shame around it. I did not want to tell my parents about it. I did not. I just lived with an itchy asshole for years.
Are you serious? You
went to Brazil to get rid of your parasites. Right? Like, I went to Brazil to get my parasites.
Holy smokes.
And they were, it's like a, they said the same thing. Like, I was in Brazil and my butt was itching so bad, and I was a missionary. And so I had on like a skirt, and I would lean against the wall and be like talking to people at church and like frantically like rubbing my butt against the wall, like doing like this like squiggle thing.
Oh man.
But man, this is making so much sense. So I'm not going to drop a name here, but like someone who I know I'm familiar with has just a lot of colon issues. And also has a lot of a really hard time letting go of the past.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And every so often this person has to go in for, this has a hard time, and it coincides exactly with what you're talking about, Tess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when your colon is, when you're constipated, what's happening is it's basically dehydrated. So what your colon does, we're just going deep into this, but your small intestine, is basically where you gather nutrients. So every single part of your body symbolically kind of correlates with like a part of your life. So your small intestine is the part where it's gathering the nutrients from the food that you've broken down in your stomach. And so if you're having issues with your small intestine, which isn't super common, but like from a holistic standpoint, you would mostly only be able to figure that out from like rubbing neural lymphatic points and seeing if there was an issue, or doing like acupuncture or something like that. But it would indicate that you're having a hard time like soaking up the nutrients from life. And then you have your large intestine and your colon, your descending colon. And this is where basically it's more or less regulating the amount of water that is supposed to come back into your body. So it soaks the water out of all the mushy, gishy food, and then it brings it back into your body, or it diarrheas it out, right? Or it soaks up too much water, and then it's not contracting properly. So it's holding onto your waste. So basically, if you think about like what I just said, so like you're hanging on to your waist and you're dried out and you are feeling so depleted that you're soaking all of your water up because you feel unsafe, or you the reverse being you're just trying to purge everything out, like that need to purge. So if you relate that to your own like experience and your own emotional experience, you can like bowel habits are like my go-to. If I just wanted to know what a person is like, I would just ask them about their poop. I'm serious.
Yeah. You know what I want? You know what my dream is right now, Doug, is for someone to animate, to take that clip of what Tess just did there and do a little animation, like a little
like a Schoolhouse Rock sort of
animation.
Educational thing about shit.
All about poop.
I would have never guessed we would have talked about poop. I love this so much.
I hope we still have a single listener listening to this. If you've made it this far, listener, congratulations. You made it. But I do have one more story about shit. So okay, I guess please.
What
was the last one here?
Yeah. I shit my pants on a date one time. And we were on a hike. And Mike, you know the story, but we were on a hike and we were coming down the mountain. And I was with some people and suddenly I stopped mid trail. I had, you know that like the shit sweats that you get that you like stop and you're like, oh man, I can't take a step or else I'll shit my pants. So my friends and the girls that we were with, they kept kind of walking. They turn around. They're like, what are you doing? I'm just standing there like an idiot in the middle of the trail. And I'm like, you guys go on ahead. I was going to check something out. My buddies kind of figured out what was going on. I don't know that they knew what was going on, but they knew something was going on. So they go down there and I'm sitting there like in a panic mode. I'm like, well, shit, I got like, at best, I got 12 steps. I can take 12 steps. So I'm like, all right, let's go off to the, side of the trail. So I go off to the side of the trail and I had miscalculated. I was certain I had 12 steps. Turns out I only had 7. So 7 steps in, I just completely shit my pants.
No.
And it's not one of these situations where I have any frame of reference of what I could possibly do. So like the good Mormon boy that I am, in a panic, I hide the evidence. So I take off my underwear, take off my shorts, take off my socks, and kind of use those things to clean myself up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now I got this like wadded up ball of shit clothes. And I'm like, well, I don't want my friends or the girls I'm on a date with to think I got, that I shit myself. So, we're going down kind of a ravine off to the right hand side. There's this ravine. So I'm 18 years old. I'm not thinking about littering. I'm not thinking about taking care of the plant. I'm not thinking about anything. I'm thinking about hiding the fucking evidence.
Yeah.
Understood. So I take this ball of my clothing and throw it down into the ravine. As I'm mid throw, so I'm throwing it. I'm like, oh shit, I'm naked from the waist down. What am I supposed to do now? So I was wearing a t-shirt and over that I was wearing like a long sleeve, like thin hoodie type of deal. So I took the hoodie off and, I tied it around my waist, but then I had to make, cause now I'm going down to the, I'm going to hike down, catch up to people. They're waiting for me in the car. And I'm like, okay, I got to tie it on one end. And so the shirt will drape down, either cover my ass or cover my front. And so I'm like, I don't know what to do. So I covered the front, tied it around, in the back. And so I just was bare ass in it,
So, why didn't you make a loincloth with both shirts?
Loving this.
Because I'm an idiot. That's why.
Shirt diaper.
Yeah. So now I'm sitting in my buddy, I can probably say his name, my buddy Clint's car. It's a car, 5-person car. There's 6 of us. So my other buddy and the 3 girls we were with, they pile into the back seat. No one is saying a goddamn word to me because it's the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to anybody that's involved in this thing. my buddy Clint is driving and I'm just sitting in the front seat hoping for a painful death. Like I'm sitting like this is the worst moment of my whole life. And I don't know what to do. And then they drop me off at my dorm. I lived in the dorms. Then they drop me off at the dorms. And so I now have to get out of the car and do this like side shuffle, like dancer walk. Like, you know how like a dance team, like gets into their positions as they like do that like side step, cross legs walk. Yeah. I do that, you know, keeping my front facing them so I don't see my bare ass cheeks, you know, just flapping in the wind behind me. Needless to say, I didn't get another date with the
didn't work out
with the girl. No,
did you explain that you would shit yourself, or did you just
I didn't say a word. What am I supposed to say? I come down, my two buddies are cracking up, so they're laughing and they're kind of giving me a hard time. But I'm like literally, I tell the story now 22 years later because it's hilarious. But at the time, like I was so embarrassed. I was crying, I was red faced and bawling. Aww. Because I'm just like, this is the lowest point of my life. Like yeah. Literally.
My gosh.
Probably still the lowest point.
Yeah.
still, yeah.
My wife loves that story. So, you know, that's true. That's true love probably, but that's
an amazing story. Yeah.
She was not on that hike. I don't think many people, there's like five people out there that tell a story to like, when they get kind of tipsy, they tell a story to a group of people. Yeah. One time this guy just shit himself.
Yeah. I feel like there's one of the girls that was so naive. Like she was like a Utah Mormon girl. And she probably on that date did not know why you suddenly came down with like bare ass cheeks. And probably like still to this day is like, this
why
guy
is Doug so quiet?
Was like a nudist. He was so weird. He was so creepy. He just took his pants off.
Oh my gosh.
Now I'm getting new levels of shame.
Yeah. You know what? Okay. I have to tell, if we can get off poop, I promise, but I have to tell my mission poop story here.
You got to tell it.
Yeah. I don't know when else I'm going to get this opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it was in my last area in Brazil, and everyone has like, I think a Brazilian poop story mission, like, but this one was really embarrassing. So I get in. We're teaching the second discussion to this family. The first time we taught them, they, the wife was super into it. The husband was not, but we come back and now he's read, he actually did the reading assignment and he's super interested to talk to us. So he's super excited about it. And we're about to launch into the discussion. And I go, I just had to take the biggest shit. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I have to use the bathroom. I go in there and it's one long log. Super long. I don't even know how it fit in there, but like it fit somehow. And I go to flush the toilet and it's not flushing.
Oh,
this is stuck. It won't flush.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm panicked here. I'm like, we're about to baptize these people.
And Brazilian toilets are terrible as is. You can't even flush your toilet paper. You have to throw it in the trash can.
But for some reason, I get the idea. What if I just threw it out the window?
Poop?
Yes.
No! Yes. No! Oh!
So I go in there, I get a little bit of toilet paper. I pick it up and I throw it out the window. Right?
Oh my gosh, dude.
So wait. So, wash my hands, flush the toilet. The now flushes fine. We go back, teach them the second discussion, commit them to baptism. And as we're finishing the discussion, the dog barks. We go outside. They have a little alleyway in between their house and the fence.
Oh no.
That's tiled.
Yeah.
And on the tile is this big ass log with a little bit of toilet paper around it. And I was just dying. You know, they're blaming it on the dog, but everyone knows their dog's like this little like Chihuahua sized dog.
It's probably like, as amazing as it is, doesn't use toilet paper.
And doesn't use toilet paper. So I've lived with that. They still got baptized and they're still my friends on Facebook and they're still in the church. And they still thank me all the time for bringing them the gospel of Jesus Christ.
I hope so much they listen to this.
I hope they do too someday, right?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But how ashamed was I that I couldn't even, I don't know, like thinking back now, and I don't know, there's just a whole lot of scenarios that could have happened, that should have happened, that didn't happen.
I can't hold it together thinking about you fishing around in that toilet.
And throwing it out the window, this big log. Yeah.
Oh, man.
You guys, now I feel like I have to tell a story.
I think you do.
Okay, yeah, I have one. Man. And it does relate. And all of this, guys, is going to tie right back in so smoothly to our topic.
Perfect.
Of shame. Yes. Right. And boundaries and all those things, right? Doing what we need to do.
That's right. Hey, Tess, before you tell the story, we're making a pact that these stories are just between the three of us, right? We're not going to tell anybody.
Okay. Nobody knows. Right. Nobody knows.
Okay. Glad we settled that.
Don't tell anybody.
No one can know.
Yeah. So I definitely threw things out the window on my mission, but not my own poop. My poop story, though.
What the hell did you throw out the window? What are you talking about?
The most horrible food, fly infested. Ugh. Pretty sure I got worms from this food Ugh. With like a dead man laying on a mattress next to us. It was very, very, very strange. There was dogs like walking over the food, like on the table. And we...
Ugh. Wait, and there was a dead man laying next to you?
I don't no, like was
she this thought was like she'd a, just this like skip I, over that detail. I don't know. This is a dead guy.
This is my thing, guys. I always just like say the really weird things and then like just skip over it because there's too many weird things.
Yada yada yada.
Yeah, there's a dead guy. Anyway, we stepped up. No, well, this was a cinder block house, you know, like no doors, no nothing. It was literally just like a cinder block structure. We walk in. There's a mattress that like a dirty uncovered mattress right in the doorway with this dude who's laying there. And he's like, he was probably just like drunk out of his brains or something, but he was like not moving, not breathing. And we had to like step onto the mattress and like step over him, like in our skirts to like get to the kitchen. And then we got to the kitchen and there were dogs walking on the countertops, like over the food. And there was like Ugh. Flies like flying on the food. And then she's like, okay, here's your food. Like, put it on the plate. And we were like, oh, we ate some of it. And then we both had worms, but we couldn't do like the dessert because it seriously was, I don't know what it was, but it was like soap and we couldn't finish it. So we waited for her to leave. And then we like, ran and like chucked it out the window.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Because you're supposed to eat the food. Like it's very offensive to not eat the
very
food.
Offensive.
Again, Tyson, I got in so much trouble because I turned down eating people's food and literally like I had people hate me, like hate me for saying, oh no, sorry, I just ate at a previous house. I'm so full. And they would be like, you don't like my food? Why don't you like my food? And I was like, I don't have four stomachs. I'm sorry.
Call me mice. Call me mice. Yeah.
Call me mice. Call me mice. Você não gosta?
Are you guys speaking Portuguese right now?
Yeah. We spoke the Portuguese.
Yeah, it's a secret club over here. Yeah. Oh, but yeah, the thing of the shame where, well, I was told so many times by companions to just eat the food. And they were like, I remember a companion telling me as I turned down food and she said, I was like, this is unhealthy. Like they're forcing us to eat this food. It's not, I'm going to throw up. If I eat this food, I feel sick. It's like, it's not good for me. And they were like, look, here's the thing. When you're on your mission, you are sacrificing your body.
Yeah. And I heard that too.
You're sacrificing it and you have to give it up. And it was like so bizarre to me, but it kind of stuck with me because that was my trainer. And she was just like, look, this is how it is. Like she was about to go home. And I remember her being like so sick, like so tired. And she was just dying. And she was just like, look at me. Like I'm sick. She had like bags under her eyes. And she was like, I've gained like 30 pounds on the mission. And this is my sacrifice. And
oh my gosh.
You just eat what you eat what you're given. And you do this for the members. And it was like, what world am I in? It was so weird. And I did it after that. Like I ate the dead man fly infested food until I couldn't. Threw it out the window.
Anyway, I have the plague now.
Yeah.
I heard that same kind of thing too on the mission, but I just pretended. I think that most challenging things that I've had to face in my life, I do this. I just pretended that I was Indiana Jones, in Temple of Doom when that village is giving them like all those bugs. No, you remember they go to the small poor village where they want them to go track down the kids. And so give them just like those like leaves that have a bunch of bugs on them. Indy's just digging in and Short Round is kind of going, Charlie, is that the lady's name in Temple of Doom? Is it Charlie?
The really annoying one?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
The whiny one.
Yeah. The one that was whiny the whole time. She's like, she won't eat it. And Dr. Jones is like, this is more food than these people eat in a month. You are being rude. So that's how I just got through my mission. Most of my life struggles, I just pretend I'm Indiana Jones because I think sneaky deep down inside of me, I think I kind of am Indiana Jones. You that's what it comes deep. Down to. Yeah.
That's what you've been doing the last couple of weeks. You've been Indiana Jones in it.
Yeah.
No, I guess it's not Captain America. It's Indiana Jones.
That's right. I got the cat. I need to get an Indiana Jones somewhere. Anyway, sorry, Tess. You were about to tell a poop story and I interrupted.
Yeah. No, but that is Indiana. I mean, Indiana Jones is worth the pause.
Don't you think? Like, I don't know that there's. Anyway, I could get into some Indiana Jones talk.
I could talk about Indiana Jones till the sun come up.
Here's the thing, man. Once we're not recording, it is Geek Fest. Indiana Jones. I also was obsessed. Me and my cousin had an Indiana Jones whip and hat, and we would fight over it. And playing
of course you're fucking upset. I mean, you guys are the same fucking person, so whatever.
I know.
Can I keep that in the podcast? And I think we've already talked about that in the podcast, right? Whatever.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Okay, so poop time. I was really sick on my mission after my mission. Talking about poop and we're so on point. It's crazy. It's amazing. Listeners, stay.
We're going somewhere with this.
So here's the thing. I got back from my mission and I finally felt safe. I was like, I can breathe. I'm okay. And I started to improve health-wise. And then I got engaged and I did not want to get married at all. And so I get engaged and all of a sudden I start having all these problems again with my bowels and like big surprise, like weird correlation. I end up going to the hospital for like this horrible flare up where like I was like seizing and I like passed out in the nurse's lap and just, it was terrible. And they end up giving me like two doses of morphine and I'm passed out and I wake up. I was at my sister's birthday party. So my sister and my fiance had to take me to the hospital in the middle of her birthday party. And which is so ironic because I was already nervous. I was like, I want this to go well. Like I want to be a good sister. And then I ended up just like ruining her birthday party and going to the hospital. Awesome. And the nurses are walking by the room, just like sneaking like Febreze sprays.
They're embarrassed for you. They're like,
literally. So I wake up and I'm like still super doped up from this morphine. And my sister is like, hey, you were farting the whole time so bad they had to open the door because we couldn't breathe. And now the nurses are having to Febreze the whole thing.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And so then, so I'm already like embarrassed, but I'm luckily super high. So I'm just laughing. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I think I have to go to the bathroom. And I say it very nicely and I'm not like asserting myself and I'm just trying to be as pleasant as possible. And I'm just like, hey, I think I need to go to the bathroom. And nobody really reacts. And then I'm like, I really need to go to the bathroom. And like a nurse kind of dawdles in there and like gets me the little, I don't know what the IV thing is, so I can push it along. And she's pushing me along and I'm looking at the bathroom door, like it's open and I see it and it's right there. And then all of a sudden, just like, boom, it just all like comes out. And I am so embarrassed. And I'm in garments and I go into the bathroom and I'm so, first off, out of it and also embarrassed and also in garments. And I didn't know what to do. And you can't throw your garments away and you can't not have them. So I like,
this is a conundrum.
I cleaned them out with paper towels.
Oh my God.
And then I threw the paper towels in the trash can. I don't know why. So like that was bad.
So that's a Brazilian thing. Then,
like, you know, not like the trash can, like the paper towel, like dispenser thing. Like it probably just reeked. And then I washed my garments like in the sink. And put the poopy garments back on. You wear your garment, you put them on. And what was I going to do? And so I put them back on, like these soaking wet poop garments.
Oh my gosh.
And just walked out like nothing happened.
The nurse is following you around. We need to breathe something. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't know. If this doesn't speak to not speaking up to our needs, I don't know what does.
Well, what it brings up for me, I mean, and this is a great segue, is the whole, when you don't have boundaries, you can't hold space for yourself. There is no space to hold for yourself. Mm-hmm. Everyone else's stuff is in your stuff. You have no, you can't hold space to state your needs and to say what you need or just to be like, hey, I shit my pants and I need some help, you know, and it's okay.
I could use some help. Yeah.
I could use some help. Or look, guys, that toilet's not flushing. I'm sorry. There's a big ass log in there. And I love you guys and hope you get baptized. Yeah. But
I would rather pick up. We have all handled poop with our bare hands to avoid the shame of being inconvenient.
Yeah. Like, holy shit. Literally,
holy shit. Like, if Tessa's shit covered garments are not holy shit, I don't know what
they
is.
Are. They're holy.
Maybe that's just the title of this episode, guys, is holy shit.
Holy shit. That's such a good,
it should be.
That is the perfect title for sure.
Holy, I had to change.
Holy shit.
I had to change mics. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
I can hear you right now. Your phone was sounding fine.
Say something really interesting.
Something really interesting.
Oh my gosh, that was the most bad thing you've ever done.
Well, I mean, you'd be surprised, Tess. I've done a lot of dad things.
Okay, testing, Doug.
Testing. This is my mic. This is my mic for a second. This is what I got to charge my other one, but this is what I'm using right now. Is it okay?
That actually sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Cool. Cool beans.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I think you made a really good point because I have been thinking a lot about this, of course, because we had such a cool conversation about these cages, like these cages that at least I have made for myself of guilt and how I allow guilt to dictate what I do in order to avoid having to make an actual decision. So I literally hand my power over to everything else outside of me. And I've set up my life so that I never actually have to make a decision or choose anything that requires accountability, because I'm so afraid of making the wrong choice that I would rather have something outside of me make that decision for me. Mm-hmm. So I would like, I set up these, like, I mean, obviously I'm not, I wasn't conscious of this, but I set up these guilt traps, and it makes it so that I never have to make a hard decision because it's already been made for me, because it's really just appeasing whatever is going to make me feel the least guilty.
Yeah, we've talked about golden or gilded cages, but I feel like tonight we're talking about guilted cages, right?
Ooh.
Yeah, those cages. Ooh, okay. Yeah, I mean, come on, I got some wordplay. Yeah. But like what I'm hearing is, Tess, you're speaking to your own experience, but I think that we all have a similar, pattern that we fall into, which is, I mean, quite literally, we would rather bare hand a log of poop and throw it out a window than step back, go to people and say, I'm a human person and I've had some, I'm having a tough time and this is too much for me. Mm-hmm. I have to feel safe and I have to have my own boundaries and I have to set some realistic expectations of me. I'm a person who shits just like everybody else that was in that room, Mike, that you were trying to hide it from. You know, just like, you know, Tess, you're in the bathroom scrubbing away at your garments and putting them back on because, oh, then no one, yeah, it's a perfect crime. No one will ever be the wiser.
No.
But we're taking it upon ourselves. And I wonder how many people out there do this, where we take the shame of being human and we don't want to admit it to anybody. We don't want to look weak or come to somebody and say, hey, this is too much for me, or that I need some help, or I'm in over my head on this and I don't know what to do. I don't know how to proceed.
Yeah. Wow. That hit.
We didn't plan to tell those stories, but those stories are such a good, like for me, as I'm thinking about it, such a good example of us reacting in the most, really the worst way we could possibly react. But our reactions came from a place of sincerity of like, someone might find out that I'm mortal. Someone might find out that I'm a human being.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's scary. Yeah.
Yeah. It's something I've been thinking a lot about is this idea of like, when we talk about boundaries, at least for me, the go-to word that I would think of is no, right? Saying no to things. I'm going to set a boundary here. And that means no, or like no means no, do not proceed any further, or I can't do that, or I won't do that, or you can't come any closer to me. And what I've been thinking a lot about, and like you just spoke to it so well, Doug, is this idea of having to almost like excuse or apologize for our humanity. And what no does, though, what setting boundaries does, is it is pushing us either away from other people, or it's pushing other people away from us, or it's pushing us away from circumstances or other people away from our situation. And I was thinking about that, where I think one of the reasons why we have such a hard time with the concept of boundaries is because it intrinsically kind of has a negative and isolating context. It's like, I don't want to have to constantly be pushing someone away, or I don't want to have to be constantly isolating myself from these things. I don't want to have to live a life of no. And I'm starting to think that instead of putting such an emphasis on boundaries, at least in my life, it's really about not saying no to everything that we don't like, but instead saying yes to ourselves. So we say yes to ourselves, and it's the same exact thing, but it's giving ourselves permission to have desires and to have needs and to have preferences. And it's not about pushing people away. It's not about turning everyone down or denying them. It's about saying, hey, I actually would really enjoy to do this. And by doing this, it does not meet your desires. And it's not about saying no to you. It's about saying yes to me. Or, hey, I don't have the capacity to do this thing for you. Because I'm saying yes to myself, I am going to say yes to my well-being and my happiness and my time. And it's not about you. It's not about saying no to you. It's not about pushing you away. It's just about saying yes to me. That's it.
Saying yes to me. Holy shit. I fucking love that. Yeah,
I love that.
And that stirs something in me. And before, Doug, when you were saying, like, you know, we couldn't go and admit like our humanness in a way, it's because I feel like my whole life, whenever we did that, we were shamed for it. You know, when we like, and the animalistic instinct of sex and masturbation, whenever we went to someone and said that, we were shamed for it.
Yeah,
you know, right. You know, my parents, I love my parents, fucking love them. And it's not that it's generational, right? But you know, I grew up, they didn't call it, we called it stinkies and bubbles. Oh, did you go do bubbles? Yeah, do stinkies, you know, kind of like,
wow.
Yeah, everything's on, it's like a, what they'd call it in a Disney movie or something. I don't know what they would do, but like, just like not being ashamed of my body and feeling like it's an animal, you know, and that animalistic nature. And what is a fucking animal? We are animals, but in a shameful way, right? And so
I love that.
Yeah.
It's like that current. Yeah. We're so, I mean, yeah, especially with our backgrounds, like there's that, that belief that like the natural man is an enemy to God, like that our carnal nature is bad. And I think even there's this like Zen approach or like this spiritual mindset, this like kind of new age approach that is, I think, a twist on Taoism, where it's like this idea of like, stay in the center of the circle, right? Like everything's okay. It's no conflict. Like you, you know, just let whatever happen, happen, and the water flows and it passes by. But like the Tao Te Ching also says that no one will ever understand the Tao. It's outside of us. Our purpose as humans is not to be perfectly Tao. It's not to be perfectly Zen. It's to learn how to be a creator of our reality. It's to learn how to understand when conflict makes sense and when it doesn't, when saying no makes sense and when saying yes makes sense. And it's about like knowing how much space to take up and how much space is taking up too much space. And it's not about being a tree. Because if we were supposed to be a tree, we would be a tree. We're humans. We're supposed to play with these different factors and these different characteristics of the physical realm. And we're supposed to learn how to handle power and hold power and then create with it and create a reality for ourselves. And there's no way for us to create a reality for ourselves if we can't even take a shit.
Yeah, the Tao. I read Tao in Chinese. Starts off by saying, you ready? I'm going to speak Chinese. You guys spoke Portuguese. So I'm going to speak Chinese.
Please speak Chinese.
And I'll butcher this. So for all my Chinese speaking homies out there, I apologize. But it says, Tao ke Tao, fei cheng Tao, which basically means what you just said, Tess, which is the Tao that is like the real, that you can, like the real Tao.
Mm-hmm.
Is it's ineffable. Like you can't understand the real true Tao. Like the Tao that you can the Tao that can be explained as mm-hmm. the Tao is not the true Tao.
Yes.
We can talk about it. We can use examples. We can tell shit in our pants stories. But the actual, like, true, like, understanding, deep understanding, can't be explained. And it's if you're describing it, then you're off course. That's fucking weird.
Why do
and
you
I could have just butchered
weird?
That too. Sorry, well, if anybody's like a big Tao person,
for someone who's not a big Tao person but kind of want to be. you try to describe it like what? Like,
well, he starts the thing by saying that very thing, and then it's, you know, a bunch of his writing of Lao Tzu trying to explain the Tao. So yeah. Like, well, you know, yeah, there's like a good dualistic balance there too.
So Mike, the gist, I mean, like Doug said, the moment that we start talking about it, we're not talking about it, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the irony of organized religion, which is that it's all about defining God. And I think one of the reasons why I do love Taoism is because it starts out by saying you cannot define God. The moment that you try to, you're not talking about it. And so Lao Tzu basically talks about how the Tao, and there's all these different translations. So it's cool that you read it in Chinese because it might be a little different. The translations that I've read, describe the Tao as, you know, it's the perfect masculine and perfect feminine, but it is, this idea of staying in the center of the circle is basically that you are not in conflict with anything. You're not pushing back or pulling because you're so at one with everything that, you know, it's kind of like what Alan Watts talks about, where he says that, how do you decide what is the inside and the outside of you? Because you came from your parents and their genetics. So are you really you, or are you your parents? And then you came out of the womb and you were a part of your mother. And now you are technically separated from her, but she grew you out of her belly. And then you're in the earth and you're really an extension and a product of the matter of Mother Earth. And she's the one feeding you, and you're going to die and you're going to become food for her. And so can you say that you are separate? And can you say that you and me and Doug are separate when really we're so interdependent upon each other to even have a sense of identity, that can we really say that we're separate? We can, but the concept of the Tao is that you are not in struggle against everything because you are everything.
I'm just having some thoughts right now. So first of all, like a true enlightened, like monk, like a true Taoist would read the first line of the Tao and close the book and never open it again and never read the rest. Right.
Yeah.
That's like what a true Tao. But it's now occurring to me that the Gospel of John, when translated into Mandarin, so you know how it starts, something along the lines of, in the beginning was the Word, mm-hmm. and the Word was with God, and the Word was God.
Yeah.
So in the Chinese translation, instead of Word, they use Tao. So in the Chinese version, it says, in the beginning was the Tao, and the Tao was with God, and the Tao was God. Oh shit, that gave me the chills a little bit, just saying that. Like, that's kind of interesting, huh?
Yeah, and the Tao was God.
That's like all the shit we're talking about summed up, right? It's like, we are God experiencing itself. We were with God. We are God. I don't know. Something in there is cool, but I can't put it into words.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, in the translation that I've, my favorite translation, which is the Stephen Mitchell one, it basically says something along the lines of, like, he goes down this like ladder of, like, when you are the danger of like being, when you become moral, then you become like proud. And then the next level is like someone who is like righteous. And then it's like, basically abusive. Right. And it's this idea that the more like justified, or the more that you start to look for like the differentness and the rightness of yourself, the more separated you get. And the danger, he's basically speaking to like the danger of this concept of morality, mm-hmm. instead of connectedness and consequences, because there's always going to be an action and a reaction, and that's how it is. But the idea that the universe has an expectation for you to be, or a judgment upon you in the way that you are, instead of just a perfect vision of what function you are and what role you're playing in this moment, right? Like the Hindus believe that this is all just a big play. And you are playing out your karma. So you're playing out the role, and the people that are abusing you, or the people that are doing things, are not only the villain in your story, but they're also the person in your karmic play that is making it so that you can be you. So it doesn't leave a lot of room for like resentment. Even though you can accept the fact that, yeah, this isn't okay, or yeah, I'm going to fight this battle, I'm going to play out this role. But the idea that you always remember that it's also a play, and to have the very robust human experience that is this like really dynamic story, but at the same time, knowing it's always a story. So to tie it back, I guess I would say we have been programmed to try to be righteous. We have been programmed to try to be good people, nice people, do the right thing. And it has really caused us to often disengage from the human experience, like Doug said. It causes us to resent our humanity instead of celebrating and accepting it and being like, damn, that person is horrible. And you know what? What character do I want to be in this play? And I'm going to be that character. And I'm going to say yes to this thing, and I'm going to do it. And instead it's like, well, I don't want to do the wrong thing. I don't want to be the wrong kind of human. There's somehow a right and wrong human to be. And then we just kind of become really small. We get scared of that human experience.
Mm-hmm. Mike, you saw behind that play recently, right? Or you saw the strings attached.
Yeah. This is just speaking to a lot that I've experienced lately. You know, and I think we talked about on our last recording, Doug, about, you know, the festival and my LSD trip, and about the stories we all play. But there's something about knowing it's a story that makes me sometimes want to play it a little more, you know? But I'm just really sitting with this saying yes to myself thing, and how much, you know, shrink to accommodate, but accommodating because I don't want to feel... You know, even thinking of something as simple as like picking a restaurant with a group of people, mm-hmm. right? A very simple thing. Instead of being like, instead of even feeling into what restaurant do I want to eat at? I mean, I'm not a very picky eater, but I do have preferences. Instead of to even feel into preferences, I'm just like, you guys pick, because I don't want to be the one who picks and people be disappointed. Instead of feeling that, I shrink. Instead of thinking into what do I want, you know, I shrink. And you know, and that's just a simple example, but like, I'm just thinking of other elements of my life where, I mean, you know, you were talking about the Tao, and if the Tao is a center in a way of the that balance and how imbalanced it is in my life of shrinking and not asserting my needs or my setting my boundaries, or this is where I am. I feel like there's a big imbalance in my life. And I'm assuming in many of our listeners who grew up Mormon life of shrinking for the collective, for the, you know, people on your mission who need wanted to feed you all the time, or, you know,
Are you guys familiar with like the concept of archetypes?
Oh yeah. We've been talking about it lately. That's one of these brought it up. We've been talking about it.
So the, you know, the idea of archetypes being that, you know, I remember a high school lit teacher. I went to him and we had read Hamlet, and I said to him, and I was like, I don't know why this story is so famous. It's just, I feel like I've watched this movie a million times. I feel like I've heard this story a million times. And he said something really interesting to me. He was like, the reality is there's probably only about 6 or 7 stories in the world, and we're just repeating them over and over and over again. And I feel like it's the same thing with archetypes, is that, you know, being the small person or being the victim or being this or that, or being the villain, we are basically feeding into a frequency of an archetype. And this channel of experience and behavior has been done a million times over and over and over again. And that's fine. It's fine that we're really just a bunch of archetypes, and we're really just a bunch of characters in a play over and over again. But I think the real adventure of humanity is how robust, how big of a human experience do we want to have? Do we want to start to explore how to play into different archetypes? Or are we just going to continue to believe that this is how it is? And that's the idea of saying yes to ourselves, is saying yes to, hey, I want to explore what it's like to be a hero. I want to explore what it's like to fight back. I want to explore what it's like to, you know, to say no, or to be difficult even. Like, are we brave enough to just even explore what it's like to be quote unquote difficult? And then we can see if it creates more dissension or more joy in our life or not. The problem is, I think everyone is really a villain and a victim and a martyr and a hero in some story in someone's life. The problem is we attach so hard to one archetype that we believe in, and we don't realize that we really are all of them, and we can be all of them. And it's not bad. Like, you, by being the hero in your own story, are probably going to be the villain in someone else's. I have been the villain in so many stories, and I've also been the victim in a lot of stories.
Ah, damn. So true. I'm looking something up for here, guys, because I saw something posted today by Tom, who's been on this podcast, and it really speaks to all of this. Let me just kind of read it here for a second. It says, why Christianity suffers from a bad case of a Disney princess theology. As each individual reads scriptures, they see themselves as the princess in every story. They are either Esther, he goes on to list some. He's like, they are Peter, never Judas. They are the woman anointing Jesus, never the Pharisee. They are the Jews escaping slavery, never Egypt. For citizens of the most powerful country in the world, who enslaved both Native and Black people, to see itself as Israel, not Egypt, when studying scripture, is a perfect example of a Disney princess theology. It means that as people in power, they have no lens for locating themselves rightly in scripture or society, and it has made them blind and utterly ill-equipped to engage in issues of power and injustice. It is some very weak Bible work.
Wow.
I mean, that's what you're talking about, right?
I love that it says that is very weak Bible work, because I actually love the Bible. Like, it doesn't trigger me. It's incredible. Like, the stories, it is one of the best, like, illustrations of all of the coolest archetypes. It, you know, coincides with so many other world documents and religious documents. And from just like an archetypal, and like when you're looking at like Jungian psychology and all of that, it speaks to the collective consciousness so well. It points out incredible patterns. The characters are really dynamic. It's an amazing work. And we unfortunately have lost it to this idea of Christianity.
And overemphasizing with the hero, I think a lot, or overemphasizing with certain role. I mean, and even I feel like, you know, as we talk a lot with about ex-Mormons, emphasizing really strongly with the victim, you know, we're a victim of this church that caused this pain and this thing. And you know what, guys, that's a fun role to play. We played it a lot, right?
Look, here's my addiction. My archetypal addiction is being Jesus, the martyr.
Same.
That is my freaking, that is my bonbon that I just keep popping in my mouth. I love it. I love it.
That's so true.
And the funniest thing about being the martyr, right, is that it, being Jesus is so funny, because the our concept of the martyr is that we never say yes to ourselves. That's the idea. When really, oh, we love it. Like, we love it.
Oh, you do.
We love it. It feels so good. It feels so good.
Yeah.
To be the martyr. We're always right. Who is the rightest of them all? The martyr. Like, you can't, you can't lose. You're always going to be right. You're always going to be both the victim and the hero. I mean, geez, you're never.
That's a combination. Damn, yeah. I'm thinking of my burning bus fantasy where I'm saving the children from the bus on my mission, right? Or like die in a fire explosion. Yeah.
Yeah, but the person hanging from the cross, dying for our sins, wins every argument, right? I mean, that's that's like the ultimate. It's like, oh, well, you know, so-and-so did such and such, and you did this over here, and you did this nice thing, and I wanted to say this, and this is how I'm feeling. And then the whole thing is, Jesus is like, I'm literally dangling from this cross, dying for your sins.
Uh-huh.
Argument over. I did the most.
I did the most. You know? I
know. Yeah.
Most. Doug, maybe? Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I love the character of Jesus, because he's actually so much more dynamic than that. And I almost want to say they, like, cause he's very non-binary in his characterization. And even in like medieval artwork, did you know that the cut in his side was depicted as a vagina?
What?
Oh, yeah. I did not know that.
He was non-gendered in like medieval art, a lot of medieval art. Yeah. He was androgynous.
Left side or right side?
I think it's the left side.
Yeah, makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. And he, yeah. So it's this idea. And there's even pictures of the Holy Ghost birthing out of his sword wound vagina. Like, so.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And so again, like they are actually really, really dynamic, but we have been fed, like force fed, just the crucifixion part. Because what is a better way for a narcissistic, like pretty much white supremacist culture to keep people, because we're going to say Mormonism comes from Puritanism, right? But it keeps people in line. And we built our entire country off of slavery. Let's be real here, right? So it keeps people in line. Because if you teach people, hey, you can't do anything better than hang on a cross and submit and just die willingly, that's the best thing you can do, then how does that just enable any powers that be to to just perpetuate this smallness that we put ourselves into, this idea of, even like, I have an issue with the concept of gray rocking. Have you heard of that?
No, no. But it sounds kinky.
Oh, it's not really too kinky, but I wish it was. So it's the idea that when you're dealing with a narcissist or a sociopath or whatever, you gray rock, which is basically that you make yourself as uninteresting as possible. Yeah, I get it, right? Like, but what I have had to do my entire life is that I attract all these narcissistic people because I have learned to be go with the flow. It's whatever, non-reactive. I'm going to keep my cool. And then anytime that they blow up at me or whatever, I just try to be as uninteresting as possible and almost like play possum. And the problem with doing that is that we never learn how to be a warrior. We never learn how to say yes to ourselves and be like, hell no, this is too much. And that's the advice given to everyone who's a victim of abuse is like, just let it pass. Don't make a big scene, you know, don't provoke them and all this stuff. And I'm saying, this is what our society is built on, is this idea that we should just be really, really small. And then when they get more aggressive, be smaller. And then when they get more difficult, go hide in a van.
Yeah.
Shit. Yes. So I had a dream this week where I was on my mission, back on a mission. And we were searching for a man named Marcelo, who I was trying to reactivate. And if you look up the name Marcelo, it means little warrior.
Whoa.
Ooh, yeah. Reactivating a little warrior.
Reactivating a little warrior. And wow. So you're talking about that, and you're talking about, yeah, fuck.
Well, I just think like the last 3 weeks, I mean, not the last, like, I mean, the last like 5 or 6 months have been some of the most intense, probably the most intense time of my entire life. I ended up fully remembering all of my trauma and coming out to my family about it. And I had to, I was terrified because it was my abuser was a member of my extended family. And I just, in my head, I was just like, it doesn't benefit anyone else for me to tell. And that's what's so interesting is that was my reasoning, was that it doesn't benefit anyone else. So it doesn't, I didn't matter enough to speak my truth. And then I did, and it actually went really well. And like was really, really good for my family. And, I think it helped me feel like finally, like it was real and it was validated. And I felt like people finally understood so much about me. And at the same time, I was so scared, like so, so scared. That something bad was going to happen to me. And by coming out about this, because that person's still alive. And then I, at the same time, my partner is in the middle of a custody battle with a pretty sociopathic ex who has been abusive and who has, who then started targeting me. And my instinct was just to disappear. Like my go-to was like, I just want to disappear. Like, and yeah. All this time I feel so much shame about it, but all this time, even I was just like, look, like you're just going to be fighting your whole life. Like, what do you, I don't know what you can do. And then it's like, these are this person's children. And I'm saying, hey, you know, just What are you just going to fight your whole life? And I'm just so tired of this reality where I have always hidden and always just been as averse to conflict as possible. And it has not worked out well for me, because what happens is I'm so easy to push around that people will just make up whatever story they want about me, or they'll just push things onto me, or they'll just sabotage stuff and put me in the middle of it because they know I'm not going to put up a fight. And I realized that I have not ever given any space for my own warrior spirit. Like, I haven't. And I want to try on that archetype. Not starting fights, but saying yes to myself and saying, no, that doesn't work for me. And I don't care how much of a fuss you put up about it. That's okay. It's okay that you're upset. Guess what? I'm also allowed to take up space. I'm allowed to say no. Yes. I'm allowed to push back. I'm allowed to be passionate about things.
Yes. It's okay to make fucking waves.
Yeah.
You make them.
Well, it's okay to stand. Who else could stand up for someone unless, I mean, you got to at some point give yourself permission. I don't know.
Say that one more time, Doug. Did you cut out on?
Yeah, I might be cutting out. I'm sorry. I got to throw out my microphone thing here. I just said that it's standing up for others starts with standing up for ourselves, right?
Yeah.
That's so true, because I think that that's true. What's interesting is I am so good at sticking up for other people, like being like, that's not okay, this and this and this. And so I've been so bad at like getting that like healthy amount of anger for myself. And to be honest, like, dude, in the last like 3 weeks, I have been like a friggin' angry person, but not like, not mean, just like, no, come at me, bro. Like, that's not okay. You guys, like, I'm just like angry, and it feels so good.
I love that.
It feels just as good as being a martyr, if not better.
Yeah, unlock that warrior.
I want to try a little bit more warrior energy, because I think that's gonna feel pretty fucking great, actually.
How do you feel like you can? I think like it's so programmed into us to be easygoing. Like, we three have a personality that is like, we want to be likable. We do. And it means stepping out of an identity.
Yeah.
And I think there's a value to assessing what we're sacrificing in order to awaken kind of that warrior spirit. What do you feel like you would have to sacrifice?
That's a good question. I mean, I do feel like there's an element to it, though, where this has been repressed in my shadow. And there's the fear that if you let the shadow out, that you're going to be the asshole. You're going to be the narcissist. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like, because I'm so far on the other side, it's almost like letting out my inner narcissist in a way, or inner asshole. That's like, but the fear is that that's going to take over, but I'm so far from, I just need the balance. Right. And so I think there's a part of it of like leaning into that. When I feel that imbalance, when I feel, you know, as you're talking, I'm feeling it very much in my body, and feeling when I feel like I'm encroached upon and when I need to like push back. Mm-hmm. And that's the spot I feel like it's hard to describe. It's, you know, the Tao, you can't describe it, I guess. I don't know. But yeah. I feel like there's a spot in me where it's like, okay, I'm feeling encroached upon. I'm feeling like I'm shrinking. All right. I need a little bit more. And it feels, and even as I'm talking about this, it feels like when I'm accessing that energy, it's selfish and mean and unfeeling. But it's, I feel like it's a getting me back to a balance and being like, it's okay. It's okay to set my space, to state my needs, to set my boundaries and ask for what I want.
What about you, Doug?
Yeah, for me, there's, can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. For me, there's a lot of terrifying things coming up because I think I've talked to both of you about it and I've talked about it on the podcast. I mean, this was not a problem for me growing up. I felt like I was very good about here's what I'm okay with and here's what I'm not okay with. And if that means, you know, putting somebody out of my life or, you know, going to blows, you know, whatever, showing some anger. I was okay with that, but it was too much. I mean, there's too much of that going on. And it took me to a place where I, you know, when you're getting dragged out of a place in handcuffs, it puts you into a position of like, hey, this is an element of me I don't like and don't want around. And I want to basically either repress it or root it out of me somehow. And that's what the last 10, 12 years of my life has been, is just becoming more and more what I would call calmer, more open to other people, more, you know, I guess less judgmental. Anger is not a thing that is at the tip of my tongue all the time. Mm-hmm. The problem is that in making those corrections, I found this out and I keep getting this lesson like pounded into me, is that that has taken me a little bit too far to the side of not only do I clearly express my boundaries to the people around me, I also am finding that I'm not sure what those boundaries are. Like I'm having to introduce myself to myself and try to figure out what it means to be Doug and what's Doug okay with, and what does Doug need to say? Hey, you, it is too much, people, like give me some space or give me a little bit of breathing room. This is true in my family, it's true at work, it's true with friends, it's true with just casual acquaintances that have some kind of expectation or obligation of me. It's true about my own interactions with myself and what I'm interested in. So for me, it's been this conversation is a scary conversation because I don't want to unleash the little warrior Doug until there's a healthy version of that little warrior, because I'm worried that unleashing the current broken, toxic version of that will do harm to me, to others, will make me unlovable, which was never true before. Even as bad as I got, I was still lovable. Mm-hmm. But now that fear is there of being seen as that angry, passionate, very opinionated, very judgmental, very toxic version of me. And so that's a really long way to answer that question with, I don't know what's coming up for me, because this is a tough conversation. I'm feeling the two of you and feeling what you're saying about standing up for yourselves and standing in your own power. And I'm like, man, when I do that, that feels dangerous and scary to me, to the impact it'll have on me, you know, and maybe collateral damage, people around me type of thing.
I think that's,
and I'm not talking about hulking out and smashing cars, doing all these fistfights. I'm just talking about saying hurtful things you can't take back, doing something that is affects someone else's life. It's just, I don't know. That's a tough one for me, y'all. This is stuff I gotta really work through.
This is super good. Super good.
This is the shit I'm still trying to hide. This is the shit I am digging around in the toilet trying to throw out the window.
This is the log.
Yeah, this is the big log.
I think I'm so glad, Doug, that you brought that up, because it sparked a thought of, you know, with clients, a lot of what I'm talking with them about is these different parts, these different selves that we have, that we're really wearing all these different masks. And we all have a protector part that's trying to ultimately protect us. And the protector is often designed to make us feel safe. But when we haven't known real safety, when we haven't known true worthiness, the protector inside of us often resorts to kind of doing the shame game, mm-hmm. and or rage or acting out, or it takes over completely. And a lot of times that rage or that shame is turned on to ourselves, or it's acting out of fear. And to me, Doug, like what I'm hearing is, in those, you're still a little bit like in fear, right? You're still scared that there's not safety in sticking up for yourself, because you are going to hurt someone and then you're going to feel shame. And I think what we really need to explore in all of ourselves is, how do I build trust with myself so that I don't have to feel this fear of what's inside of me? Because I think ultimately, like, that's why we want to be nice people. That's why Mike and I probably have been naturally so appeasing. And Doug, why maybe in the past you were maybe, we could say, reactive, or potentially even like hurt people. Realistically, it sounds like you were terrified and you felt really unsafe. And the thing is that there's such a thing as an archetype of a warrior who fights for the right things, not out of fear, but from a place of, hey, I'm going to protect myself and the people that I love from aggressors that are trying to take more than they need. And I think there's a difference between being highly reactive and then from behaving from a place of, hey, I'm getting encroached upon. This isn't working for me. I'm going to do what is necessary to put that to a halt. Because you're giving yourself, again, that right to be human, not from a place of like rage and hatred and judgment, but from a place of, hey, I'm just as much allowed to take up space here. And I trust that my safety matters. That, I don't know if that makes sense for you, but.
Totally. Out of love.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. Sorry, Mike, if I interrupted you there.
No, I was just going to say out of love, out of self-love, out of love for people you're protecting, out of love for yourself. Because that's who you're also protecting, you know?
Mm-hmm. I also feel obligated to just clarify that I have not, like, hurt people in the past. I feel like I need to make sure that's known.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone's like, thought that.
You're not a scary guy.
Like, I'm talking about fighting douchebags in bars. That's what I'm talking. I'm not talking about, like, you know, just like getting real big and scary to my kids or something like that. That's not what I'm talking about. Okay, just to clarify. Thank you.
Which also would be okay. You know what? People do that too, right? And ultimately, it's again because they feel unsafe. Like, no matter what it is that we do that we feel like hurts people. It's really about why. Like, why do I feel unsafe? Can I take a pause and ask myself, am I behaving out of reactive fear, or am I responding to something that doesn't work for me?
And saying yes to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And saying, you know what I need? I need this thing. I need a little bit of space. I need Italian food tonight, or I need someone to back off from my children. whatever the intensity is of the need, we're allowed to ask ourselves, do I need this thing? Like, do I even want this thing? Is this something that feels really important to me right at the second? Or would it even just be like nice? And am I allowed to vocalize it? And I don't think, I think it's okay if someone punches us in the face to get pissed and then be like, hey, that wasn't okay. I'm going to speak to you strongly about it.
Yeah. Well, and to stick up for your inner child the same way you'd stick up for those with kids, your own children, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I think ultimately, like, I think with all of this is asking ourselves, what are we doing to foster that sense of safety? Because I think that if we feel safe with ourselves and we are fostering that safety and we're not allowing ourselves to be bullied from within, then that warrior spirit will not be a shadow version of the warrior. It will not be it's not naturally just a narcissist. Every warrior is not a narcissist. Indiana Jones, he's not a narcissist. He's not a bad guy, but he's badass, right?
He's fucking badass.
He is badass. He might be a narcissist. I don't know.
He might be a little narcissistic, but we're not going to think too much about it.
We're not going to do a psychological breakdown of Indiana Jones. Yeah. I love you too. We started this thing talking about taking big old twosies, and now we're sitting here like actually talking about how that relates to unlocking our inner warrior, caring for our inner child, and setting healthy boundaries. That's literally how this conversation went. I'm blown away right now.
Exactly.
Holy smoke.
I mean, I know we have to kind of wrap up here soon. I kind of want to bring up the time when I did let that anger out and it brought us together.
I want to hear about this.
Doug and I mean, we were just acquaintances at first, you know, we were on the intramural basketball team. Our brothers
are one of my favorite stories. I didn't realize this was the story you're telling.
Yeah, right. Our younger brothers were actually better friends, I guess. You know, Doug worked all the time in college. Doug had to work.
Yeah.
But we were on this intramural basketball team together. And Doug's brother, can I say this, Doug, that he's just like,
oh yeah.
He just, I fucking love the guy. He just spouts out stuff with his mouth all the time. Right. So we're getting killed in this game. We're down by like 40 points. It was a weird intramural thing. We were either up by 40 or down by 40. There was no in between. There was no close games.
Yeah. Yeah. My brother does not know that there is a shut off valve to his mouth. And the problem is he's smarter than everybody he comes into contact with, and he's sharp, and he will just talk trash, but not like yo mama jokes or anything like that. He will find immediately the thing a person is most insecure about, and he will start digging into that thing.
Oh, he's good with that. He's good with that.
He's good at it. Yeah.
And so we're down by 40 points, and he's still trash talking. He's still like talking back to these people. And meanwhile, we're just like, let's just let this game be over. And how did you get involved in it, Doug? Do you just out of association or what?
The guy thought I was, he confused my brother and I look alike.
Yeah.
And so he thought I was, that's what he thought. Yeah.
So Doug, the game's almost over. Doug's taking the ball down the court and some guy just clotheslines him mid court. And
look, this hasn't happened to me many times in my life, but something fucking snapped in me. And I come charging from the other side of the court, tackle the guy, and we just start going at it.
Oh my God, I love that image. Mike just like tackling.
Yeah.
Let me paint a more vivid picture of what Mike did. He came running from God knows where at full speed, grabbed the dude was a big old dude. Like he was an offensive lineman at the university that we went to. Like he was a big old boy.
He was fucking
and
huge.
Mike came running in, grabbed him, and spun, like the two of them spun around like three times. And Mike slammed this dude against the brick wall. And then it just went from there, just like attack mode. Like like honestly, I feel like I could give up all the Indiana Jones, Star Wars, and Captain America movies that we've ever seen if I could just watch that scene of Mike swooping in like literal like knight in shining armor. I'm about to get my ass kicked. This guy clotheslined me. I'm about to get my ass kicked, and Mike comes like a shooting star, like an angel from heaven, grabs him, spin around three times. Boosh, you can hear it throughout the whole gym. You can hear him slam this guy up against the wall and then take him down. It was so, dude, I love Warrior Mike.
Yeah, well, and how did it feel?
It felt fucking great. And I wonder if all that repression I was doing was to be let out in that moment, bring the two of us together, so then later we could start a fucking podcast together and meet all these amazing 20
years
people.
Ago.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful for Warrior Mike.
I'm grateful for Martyr Mike, who suppressed that warrior for so long to let him out in that moment.
Yeah.
No, but I think like that's the thing is when I have to say, being a martyr, ultimately the title of being a martyr is right, dying for everyone else. And I have to say that my addiction to martyrdom has been very deadening. It kills my life source. It does. And when I tap into my like own personal warrior energy, that is like, no. And it doesn't mean I have to call anyone names. It doesn't mean I have to be like super mean. It's not like you beat this guy to a bloody pulp. But you're basically like that. Probably you were the man of Doug's dreams in that moment, you know?
Still is.
And he mattered enough to you to meet this person who was serving unnecessary aggression with like an equal and opposite force. And I don't know if that probably takes away a lot of my Zen master points, which I mean, I didn't have a lot going for me as is, but I'm so tired of just like having to have one experience as a human. I want to tap into a lot of them. I want to have the warrior experience, and I want to feel that life source that gives me a sense of purpose. And I see how it can be dangerous because there's wars going on, and I'm not pro wars and things like that. But I don't think there would be so many wars if people just were able to speak their truth and be like, nope, that doesn't work for me. And then we're not like having these giant battles that we don't even know what we're fighting about. If people just spoke and they just said no, and then they had their little spat. I mean, we're the only creatures that are having these like massive worldwide wars because we can't just say yes to ourselves on an interpersonal level. So then we have to like start these massive wars or these political battles and all these different things because we never learned how to just say, no, that doesn't work for me and I'm not doing it. And I think that it's created this society of smallness where, yeah, whoever is the most narcissistic and the most manipulative wins often.
Look at me holding back my Donald Trump comments.
I mean, do you have to? You don't have to.
I think you didn't.
Yeah, I said enough with that. Yeah, that's probably true.
Oh, this is the conversation I needed today, guys. As always. God,
same. I don't know what the magic is, but it's real.
Oh, I love you guys so much.
Love you too. But Doug, yeah, love you too. I just want to see your shirt. That shirt had to be made for you.
I've been chuckling at it the whole time.
Oh, that was made for you, right?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. The kids of some of our friends, I'm in their life all the time. And I say, I mean, the two of you know this as well as anybody. I get going with some weird phraseology and some weird delivery of words and how I say things. I'm just kind of weird that way. And, hum a few more bars, that type of deal. But,
a few more bars.
Yeah, you might want to hum a few more bars of that one before I get on board. But,
give me some bars. I need a few more bars on that one.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, they just made this shirt of stupid things I say.
And those are them. Rules. I'll read it for the listeners.
It's too identified. Oh, yeah, don't. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
They're secret. Great rules, though. They're good.
They are good. They are good rules.
I've been wanting to say them so bad this whole time.
Yeah.
I wish I had snuck them in.
Yeah. It's just like a phrase here and there at a time.
Just awaken your bleep spirit.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Like, I love this shirt, but it's as you both know, I've been on the road for 2 weeks now. And so this is my laundry is going as we speak. This is my laundry day shirt. So yeah.
You wear it well.
Lovely color. Beautiful. I won't say what color because it might be too identifying. But
All right. Now there's shit. Yeah.
It makes your skin pop though, the color. It does.
The skin, the eyes are glowing.
Oh, you two are going to make me blush.
Do you have a glow light on you right now? You're a demon.
Filled my bucket. If we're going to end on a compliment to me, I accept. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Good for you. I feel like it's the thing that when I first met you, I don't think you would have been able to, you would be writhing right now.
That's so true. God, I was thinking that, but I didn't want to say anything. But like, I felt comfortable being like, wow, thanks, you two.
You
and I didn't.
That's a big shift.
You know what I expected you to say, Doug? I thought you were going to say, if we're going to end on a compliment to me, I'm going to give you guys 10 more compliments.
Yeah. Right.
That is exactly what's been rolling through my mind. So what's been rolling through my mind is like, okay,
don't do it. Do
a self-deprecating thing and then make a bunch of compliments to Tess and a bunch of compliments to Mike. And I'm not fucking doing it. Yeah.
We call that progress.
You are a warrior. You're a compliment warrior.
You are a fucking warrior, man. Look at that guy. Tess, do you want to plug your stuff real quick though?
Oh,
people know who you are, but like, you know, how to find you. Let's like plug your stuff.
Yeah. So you can find me. I mean, Instagram is the easiest way. Tessie, TESSIE.frequencies. I'm not going to spell that. But and then, I guess if you wanted to find my website, like the link to my website is on there. But if you couldn't find my Instagram, then it's Quantum Shift Energy Work, I think. I don't freaking know because I just
I'll be on the show notes. But
it'll be on the show. It's in the show notes. Here's what you should know. Yeah. This is what is valuable, I think, is that I think I have gotten a lot of people that come to me from the show, which is my favorite. I love it.
Yeah.
It's so fun. And everyone is so unique. Like I think most of them didn't grow up Mormon. Most of the clients that have come to me.
Really?
Yeah. It's really interesting. But I do want to say sometimes people get there and they're like, I don't really know what I'm doing here, but what's energy work? And I feel like I need to give like a disclaimer that is, I don't really do that much. There are incredible energy workers that like do a lot of body work and the moving of energies. For people, And what my function or role is with clients is more so from like a wellness / spiritual coaching standpoint. That is, we're naturally going to do energy work. Sometimes we might use some of those approaches in the process. We're going to use a lot of different methodologies that I've gathered up over the years. But the reason why you would want to work with me is not to fix anything, but more so, I'm going to ask you really hard questions. We're going to identify some really intense patterns that are blocking your ability to, you know, explore that creative power in your life. And a lot of times it's helping people kind of recover their birthright to spirituality, but, you know, not from like a dogmatic approach, but how do I find my own sense of spirituality? How do I find my own sense of power? A lot of times that requires healing some old wounds. I'm not a specialist or a therapist in healing your stuff, but it will probably naturally occur as a byproduct of working through these things, approaching them. We might do guided visualizations. We might have conversations. We might laugh. We might cry. A lot of times I might make you cry. A lot of times I might make you hate me. Yeah. And then love me at the end. Yeah. But it's about having these hard conversations that are going to push you to question everything that you thought. And I won't know the right answer, but you will.
Well, just a quick plug for that, Des. One of the things I've loved, because I've done several sessions with you, you talk about energy work. I feel like there's a magic that you have where you can dig in, because it's almost like you're feeling what I'm feeling. And you're like, wait a minute, what you're saying is not really resonating. Let's get to the truth here. I'm feeling this. What does this mean? You know, mean? And I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. Okay. Let's get real.
And I started out as an energy worker, right? So I have the ability to do it. What I found was that giving people the answers didn't really instigate a lot of change. And so for me, I don't purport to be like psychic or anything. I am doing energy work while we're sitting there, and I know a lot of times what's going on. I'm sitting there like, okay, how long should I wait before I ask them about like their right shoulder? But I like to wait, and I like to watch and see how they're sitting and all kinds of stuff. But I'm doing that, but I don't like to be the answer giver. I like to be the question asker.
Yeah. Well, another plug. You're really good at it. And it does seem like you have some kind of psychic powers or something like that. I accused you of that actually during one of our sessions, like reading my mind. I got nervous. I was like, can you read my mind? Like, what's going on here? But not only am I the president of the Tess fan club, I'm a member too. So for all of you out there who want to contact her, that'd be wise. I highly recommend.
Oh, thank you guys. You're sweet. I mostly just like talking to you guys. That's my favorite part. Okay, well, let's do this again. Let's not let as much time pass if possible. Sure. Well, I know you guys are super popular, but
I think we're back in the groove though. We had a good reconnection. I think we're back in the groove. So
sounds good.
Love
and
it.
I've been given the warning. So I gotta go.
I gotta go.
Speaking of me,
get out of here.
Speaking of me saying dad things, I gotta go say a bunch of dad things.
All right. Nice. They'll make a t-shirt out of it. It'll be great.
Love they'll make a t-shirt. Yeah, love you.
Love you guys. So
bye.
Much.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to Mormons on Mushrooms podcast. We have so much fun recording it. And if you love it, we would absolutely love it if you could leave a review on wherever you get your podcasts. It would really help our visibility so more people can listen to it and be enlightened and hear our crazy stories. So thanks again for tuning in.